Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to tell
you what you need. Cut you off with the fact you need to know Twin Peaks is ready for you. You want to watch some World Series baseball? There is not a better place in Kansas City to watch sports on TV than, of course, Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks has all the televisions you could possibly want. That's right. Great TV setup. Doesn't everybody want the great TV setup? Of course you do. Twin Peaks, you'll find wall-to-wall TVs, made-from-scratch food, signature 29-degree beer served by the best-in-class Twin Peaks girls. Twin Peaks eats, drinks, scenic views, and, of course, if you go to Twin Peaks, TwinPeaksRestaurant.com, you can get that great made-from-scratch menu to go home as well. The Twin Peaks girls will be happy to bring it out to your car. So don't forget that as well, TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. Let's start off with what happened on the broadcast last night with the Bears. I think this is kind of interesting, and I think there's some interesting stuff. Not only is, you know, Nick Foles and Matt Nagy former Chiefs, but I think there's reasons to be in touch with this one as well. Here's Brian Griese on the broadcast last night.
We were talking to Nick Foles yesterday, and he said, you know, sometimes play calls come in, and I know that I don't have time to execute that play call. And, you know, I'm the one out here getting hit. Sometimes the guy calling the plays, Matt Nagy, he doesn't know how much time there is back here. And so that's something that they have to get worked out.
All right, that got both of the principals involved there, Matt Nagy and Nick Foles, talking after the game. We turn to Mark Carman from WGN in Chicago. He joins us on the T-Mobile guest line. Mark, how are you, buddy?
Sorin, I'm great. That ain't great right there for Brian Griese, Matt Nagy, Nick Foles, and the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, somebody screwed up, right? Like, so either Nick Foles said this in confidence to Brian Griese, and Brian Griese put it on the television. Nick Foles said something else, which is his story, and talked about it, scenarios that happened on the sideline, and Brian Griese got it wrong and put it on the TV. Again, Brian Greasy's in trouble. You know, or I mean, it's one of these two, right? Like, what's the reaction in Chicago today?
Well, I'll take option A, Sorin. I don't believe that there was a miscommunication. I think that Nick probably was feeling comfortable talking to Brian. You know, two quarterback pals having a conversation about what's going on. This dude is sending me out there. He thinks that I have time to make these plays when whoever, last night Aaron Donald is in my face in two seconds, really, maybe a second and a half. So, look, the Bears offense is a complete mess. Everyone knows that. Nick Foles is not Patrick Mahomes and or anybody who's going to rescue him. I thought it was very interesting today Matt Nagy's talking about it's possible that, hey, maybe I should give up play calling duties. All that's on the table in Chicago right now, Sorin, with the 5-2 Bears, but that offense is completely broke.
I think this is interesting because we know how tight Matt Nagy and Brett Veach are, and Andy Reid, 61 years old. You know, I could see a scenario whether, you know, Matt Nagy ends up getting fired in Chicago and then, you know, is an offensive coordinator somewhere. I think he'd be a strong candidate based on knowing all the working parties to be the next head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs in some way, shape, or form. That's why I'm intrigued by this, and I follow very closely where Matt Nagy is going. And I thought he handled it really well after the game and saying, listen, I don't know what was said. You'll have to talk to Nick. He's coming up next. And Nick Foles is like such a soft-spoken guy. He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy to speak out of turn. But you think that's probably how this came down.
Well, here, a couple things. It's interesting with Matt Nagy because he's 25-14 as the Bears head coach in regular season football games in 3 years. That's not exactly fireable, right? That's a pretty decent accomplishment for a first-time head coach. However, I mean, he was coming in here as, you know, offensive guru guy, and they have never been that. It's all been about the defense. So I don't think that he's going to be, say, fired at the end of the year, even if the Bears collapse and say they finish up, you know, 7-9, 8-8, which we talked about this a couple of weeks back. But, you know, I also think that the public perception on Nagy in Chicago is very low right now. So if things continue to go south, he could be scapegoated at some point here. But Nick, to me, and I don't know him super well as far as his press conferences, Sorin, I only really paid close attention to him in Chicago. He is like five times further out there than Mitchell Trubisky was. He's been such a breath of fresh air here. Like there's actual thoughts coming out and he's excited. But I just don't think he felt like he was talking out of turn. I just think he was just having a, and I'm just guessing here, but I think logically, he was just having a conversation where these are two guys and they're talking football, and he just felt like he could share what was going on, and he didn't protect himself particularly well.
All right, last question, and that's about the play-calling part of it because that was the new element that was coming around to this. Chuck Pagano's a guy that's like Steve Spagnuolo here in Kansas City. He's been a head coach. He can handle the entire defensive side of the ball with Matt Nagy never having to poke his head in that room or manage what's going on over there, which is what I believe happens with Andy Reid. He hires a guy who can do the job, and he lets him do the job. What about the play-calling? Like, you know, to me – people used to question Andy Reid's play calling until he got Patrick Mahomes, right? Like, it all looks better with Patrick Mahomes. Is this just like, you know, you can't do a draft right now and get a new quarterback, and so we got to come up with something, and that's fire the play caller?
A little bit. I mean, look, they're 27th in points per game. They're 30th in yards. They're 30th in yards per run. They can't run the ball. They can't throw the ball. They can't do anything. They're not good in the red zone. 29th in the league, 47.6%. But Nagy said, look, if it gets to the point where we think that it's not the best thing for the Bears for me not to call plays, then maybe I won't. Maybe they'll give it to the offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor, right now, or maybe they'll have John DeFilippo, the quarterback's coach, do it, or maybe they'll just turn the offense over to Nick Foles. So he's open to it. I just think his biggest strength for me, Surin, Matt Nagy, is that he is a eternally positive guy. He handles the media great, like you pointed out today. I mean, he gets put in a tough spot right there, and he handles it perfectly. He's incredibly positive. He's having a great time on the team playing. The players love him. To me, that's his skill set. Offensive guru, I don't see it at all. And sure, he'd look great if he had a great quarterback, but what does that tell you? I mean, I'm not saying he can't do it, but it just doesn't seem like the best role for him.
Yeah, he's been down some draft picks as well. You know, I don't know. It'd be interesting. I'm with you. I'd look long and hard at that regular season record before, if I were ownership, right? Fans are going to be fans, but I'd look long and hard at that regular season record before I would toss Matt Nagy overboard. Mark Carman in Chicago. Always great talking to you, buddy. We appreciate it.
All right, Surin, be good. Thank you.
All right. I don't know, man. Like, what do you expect? Right, like what do you expect from Nick Foles and from Mitchell Trubisky? And I'm looking at the draft. Their draft picks since he got there, he's been there. This is his third year. In 18, they went linebacker, center, wide receiver Anthony Miller, who has never kind of lived up to that second round billing. Linebacker, D tackle, D end, wideout. Okay, the next year, running back David Montgomery, third rounder, by the way, because they'd given up their first and second for Khalil Mack. Let's keep that in mind. Wide receiver Riley Ridley, fourth round wide receiver. Corner, running back in the seventh, and corner in the seventh. They didn't have a fifth. Okay, then this year they go 2 seconds. They have tight end, corner, DN, corner, a wideout in the fifth, and then a tackle and a guard in the seventh. If you want to be better on offense, maybe draft some offensive players. Like, maybe draft some high offensive players. Like, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but part of the reason why the Bears' offense sucks is because they gave up, like, four draft picks to go get Khalil Mack. I always relish when people just absolutely look at, you know, what's happening with a trade, and the immediate name value is Khalil Mack. They win. Who's won that trade, the Raiders or Bears?
Raiders.
Raiders.
Not really even close.
No, I don't think so.
It also speaks to the importance of getting, you talk about GM, head coach, quarterback. You can't blow it at number two. And we'll may never know about how good Nagy is because they missed with the quarterback.
Yeah, no, and if you don't get the quarterback right, you know, then everything else is that much. I'm not saying you can't. You can kind of get the quarterback right, and you can be a pretty damn good team. If you get the quarterback wrong, it's almost impossible to be a really good team. And to me, they got it wrong with Trubisky, and he's still overcome it to the point of being a pretty good team.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So, listen, if they want to fire Matt Nagy, I think it would take about a second. It would take about a second for somebody else to run out there and hire Matt Nagy as their head coach. Some other NFL news, Ravens finalizing a deal to add Dez Bryant. He said he was in tears. He was in tears to come back. Been out of the league for 2 years. Dez Bryant. Should everybody be rushing to the waiver wire to pick up Dez Bryant in their fantasy league?
No.
No, I don't think so.
I will not.
Yeah, I don't think so. Buccaneers Pro Bowl wideout Chris Godwin suffered a broken finger Sunday against the Raiders. He had surgery. I believe they've already ruled him out for this week, if I'm not mistaken. So keep that in mind on your fantasy team. Eli Apple released by the Panthers. This was a corner that we discussed. Should the Chiefs be going after this guy? High pedigree, right? A few hours after he left practice early after telling the coaches he couldn't go on his injured hamstring, they said, okay, well, then just keep walking, right? Keep going on down the road.
Keep limping down the road.
Yeah, he's not going to play here. And the Cowboys have traded one of the guys we talked about, Everson Griffin, veteran defensive end, has been traded to the Detroit Lions. According to multiple sources, ESPN is reporting this. Cowboys are going to receive a conditional sixth-round draft pick in 21 that could become a fifth-round pick. We'll see if the Chiefs are able to get anything done. 3 p.m. Central time, I believe. I think that's the new deadline time for everything in the NFL. 3 p.m. Central. It's definitely next Tuesday, a week from today. November 3rd is your NFL trade deadline. Peter Vermes and Sporting Kansas City getting ready for a trip to Cincinnati. They come off a 4-0 win against the Colorado Rapids. Peter Vermes, I asked him today what he felt, you know, but not even, I think it was only one shot on goal, and even that was a weak shot. Tim Melia facing nothing, and we've seen some difficult situations for that back line. I asked Peter Vermes if he felt like or what he thought that back line was coming along.
Yeah, if I was evaluated on that game, it was great. I think that we have cut down on the mistakes that are, you know, in a lot of respects, better. I don't have a better way to put it than elementary. They're mistakes that, you know, we shouldn't be making at this level. So we've really cut out those. And I also think there's a level of confidence in the group at the moment, both defending and attacking. I think the guys feel good, and we're getting, and it's not, this part's not easy. And you know, you've brought this question up to me a few times about possession. It's hard to maintain consistency in possession when the team is changing as often as it is based on the congestion of schedule. But the guys, no matter who we're putting in now, we're starting to get a little bit more consistency with it, which is a good thing. And I think that's a lot to do with guys getting multiple guys getting time on the field. And, you know, going back to the defensive side of it as well, it starts with those guys, because a lot of times we're building out of the back, and they've been pretty good on the ball. So it's helped the group.
Look, Sporting is way better than Colorado, and they did everything he was just talking about, building out of the back. They're just a better club, and it was really – they were toying with Colorado for much of that game. Now, I was terrified, I will not lie, going into the second half of that match when they hadn't scored yet. They were dominating the game but hadn't scored, and you're like, is this one of these where they're going to just own the ball and they're going to lose off some crappy run out 1-0? And, you know, Peter actually, we didn't have it in there before it, but they said my name that I was asking the first question, and he's like, oh, yeah, what is it? You know, because I kind of riled him up one time. So he acted all, you know, super happy and everything, and was just kind of giving me a hard time when we got things started. But I also take that as a sign that, listen, Peter Vermes is you know, the consummate pro. He's the guy's a stud. He's not going to hold a grudge or be pissy or anything like that. But it says to me, he came in there relaxed and happy, and he likes where this club is. Like, he likes what he's got on the pitch, and I think they're in great shape. One more for you from Peter Vermes, talking about the club and the balance that he's got. Said the club has worked hard trying to find the balance between offense and defense as this season has gone along.
I think that we have cut down on the mistakes that are, you know, in a lot of respects, better. I don't have a better way to put it than elementary. They're mistakes that, you know, we shouldn't be making at this level. So we've really cut out those. And I also think there's a level of confidence in the group at the moment, both defending and attacking. I think the guys feel good, and we're getting, and it's not, this part's not easy. And you know, you've brought this question up to me a few times about possession. It's hard to maintain consistency in possession when the team is changing as often as it is based on the congestion of schedule. But the guys, no matter who we're putting in now, we're starting to get a little bit more consistency with it, which is a good thing. And I think that's a lot to do with guys getting multiple guys getting time on the field. And, you know, going back to the defensive side of it as well, it starts with those guys because a lot of times we're building out of the back and they've been pretty good on the ball. So it's helped the group.
Sporting Kansas City and FC Cincinnati going at it on Wednesday in Cincinnati. Eli Drinkwitz talking today, and I played some of his stuff earlier, but this one I liked because Bazilak has been such a revelation here. But I'm curious, is there more, right? This is his first year working with Bazilak. It's his first year, Bazilak's first year as a starter. And so I was curious, maybe we could find out, hey, are we just actually scratching the surface, or is this, you know, everything's there? I asked Drinkwitz what his philosophy is when it comes to young quarterbacks. Does he throw the whole offense at him and say, here, you're in the deep end, swim? Or is it something where they put a little bit in that he can handle and they add to it week by week?
I don't subscribe to the philosophy of throwing him out there and let him sink or swim. I think football in general, but specifically the quarterback position, is about confidence and having confidence. And once you lose confidence or get shaky, it's tough to recover. You can't doubt yourself as a player. And if you ever start doubting yourself, that's when things are not good. So we try to help identify what his strengths are. Now, there's always going to be some certain level of struggle. There's certain level of, okay, I've still got to improve at this area. But we try to figure out what are the strengths are, build around their strengths, and then let them develop. Identify the weaknesses, you know, play to your strengths, identify your weaknesses and try to improve those. With our quarterbacks, that, you know, no different than our team. That's what we try to do, identify what our strengths are and then play to those strengths. No, we don't have the entire system in. We don't call plays that our quarterback's not comfortable in. You know, every Monday when I get finished with the ready list, I show it to Connor and say, okay, what do you not feel comfortable with? I don't like this, this, or this. On Wednesdays when we're done with third downs, what do you like? What do you not like? Hey, I don't like this. Take it out. You know, it doesn't matter if I like it. It matters if he likes it and can execute it. And I think I've been doing that since I was coaching seventh grade football. I don't know if that's unique. I doubt it is. It's not about the plays that we call. It's about the plays that we can execute. And the way you execute plays is your players having confidence in themselves that they can do it, and they have confidence in their teammates that they're going to execute.
I thought you got a lot right there from that. I mean, how he went through it, what they installed, third downs on Wednesdays. Okay, now what do you like? And he's taking it out. We've heard that before. Like you said, that's not new. We've heard that. That was a big talk about Nick Foles and Doug Peterson adjusting the offense and their route to the Super Bowl when he stepped in. As he said, okay, what do you like? What do you not like? And he brought back some concepts from stuff that Nick Foles had run elsewhere that he was confident in. So Eli Drinkwitz is right. That's not new stuff, but it does just show his total command of seemingly every level of football.
Not just putting guys in a position to succeed, but keeping them out of positions where they might fail.
Right. And I think the other thing, if you're a Missouri fan, the entire system is not in.
Yeah.
So you're 2-2, playing only SEC teams, and you are not and you hung 40-something on LSU, and you don't have the whole system in. That's encouraging. I like to hear that if I'm a Tiger fan. All right, let's take a break. Sam McDowell, the Kansas City Star, covers the Kansas City Chiefs. He'll join us next. We'll talk some more Chiefs football here on the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
What's with your sour look?
This is my face.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. He used to cover football. Now he covers football. He's gone from corner kicks to corner backs, from the blue hell to the sea of red. Have you figured it out yet? Do I really have to keep doing this? He's the Chiefs beat writer for the Kansas City Star, Sam McDowell, in the Program.
All right, welcome back. You're in the Program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We talk some Chiefs football. Sam McDowell from the Kansas City Star joins us. He's brought to you by our friends at Corona. Corona Light, Corona Premier. Grab it right now. In fact, you can even grab the Corona Hard Seltzer wherever you find your Corona. The Hard Seltzer, 0 grams of carbs, 0 calories. Get it wherever you find your Coronas. Make sure you're stocked up for game day. Sam McDowell, welcome to the T-Mobile guest line. How are you?
I'm doing well, Seren. I thought maybe I got bumped today. I thought maybe you had, like, I don't know. Did you have Kirkhoff on today? I thought maybe he went long and I was getting bumped.
No. We're just getting through the need to know, man. You're not bumped. You're good. I'm sorry, Sam. We'll try to get to you. We'll try to get to you quicker if we kept you waiting. My bad.
You know I'm kidding.
I do indeed. I hope you are. Tell me about the trade deadline and whether or not we should expect anything from the Chiefs. Brett Veach has been a very aggressive general manager. We're seeing more and more trades in the NFL. Everson Griffin got traded today. Do we think we're going to see the Chiefs get out there and mix it up and maybe come away with someone?
You know, I'm going to say that, you know, of course that they are looking at and analyzing what's out there. But I think there's two things that probably hinder a big move being made, you know, or even sort of the moves that we saw last year. But I think, A, the fact that there's not a lot of cap room compared to what he's had to work with the past couple of years. And B, I don't see a glaring need on this team to where you would give up draft capital or whatever the capital you need to give up for a player. I don't think that they have a glaring need that makes that necessary. They're going to be getting a guy back at cornerback, and maybe you looked at that position. I think L'Jarius Sneed, they're pretty they are confident he's going to come back, and they're pretty pleased with what he showed early in the season. I don't see a big need for this team right now.
What about the interior offensive line, guard to guard?
You know, if you're pointing out weaknesses, I think of the three down linebacker and the interior line are the primary positions you point out. I guess my general thought is every team has weaknesses. That's probably theirs. But I also think when Mitchell Schwartz came back, Rimmers played pretty well at guard when he was over there. And I think you can go with him and Wiley for the rest of the season. Or Allegretti, if one of those two, you know, you feel like aren't up to snuff, you can plug in Allegretti. I think he's shown that he's at least capable. So I don't see that being enough, like I said, to give up draft capital for future years.
Wow. So you liked Remmers at guard?
I thought he played pretty well in the Ravens game. And I think it was Pro Football Focus maybe it was a different website that rated him pretty well in that game too, whenever Wiley had the illness that forced him to go to the hospital mm-hmm. before the game.
Yeah, that was that one. I like Remmers being on this team. But, I mean, like, so now you are where you are with the injuries, with Schwartz being down and Remmers out of tackle. And if Allegretti goes down, who are you turning to?
Well, yeah, I mean, you'd be down a couple of guys. You'd have to ask Kilgore to slide over. Do you plug Austin Ryder back in at center?
A guy who lost his job for performance reasons.
Well, yes. I mean, the short answer is yes. He lost his job for performance reasons. Now, they say he's been dealing with a little bit of a knee issue. And to their credit, they have put him on the injury report with an ailing knee. But, yeah, he lost his job because they wanted to improve at that position. And frankly, they have. They've been better at that position the past
yes.
2 weeks.
Yes, they have. Although Kilgore's grades, it's kind of like if you could smash Austin Ryder and Kilgore together, you'd have a really good center. Because one of them grades, at least according to Pro Football Focus, let me make sure I get this right. Ryder grades well against the pass and bad against the run, and Kilgore's bad on the pass, and which isn't what – maybe I got that backwards because that's not what my brain tells me it should be. Let me look this up real quick. I know they were like each of them – represented the other one's strengths. Where is it? Here it is. Center.
Well, are you
Ryder? Ryder
and Kilgore was really good against the pass. I know that. I don't. Do I have that
here's,
backwards?
Here's their overall grades. They've got Ryder as a 76 against the pass and a 60 on the run, and Kilgore is a 54 in pass block and 69. Against the run.
You know what's so interesting about that, Seren, is when you looked at this team in the past, you kind of dismissed the fact of how good an interior lineman was on the run, or even the guys on the edges were against the run, and you said you just need the guys that best protect Patrick Mahomes. And while that's still priority number one, the gap between priority number one and two is different because of the way defenses are playing them. I think you prioritize the run block a little bit more than you probably did in the past. If you've got light boxes and you're able to run block, you're going to have a lot of success, and that's the way teams are playing them right now. The Broncos played them a little bit less that way than what we had seen the previous couple of weeks.
There's little to fear here against the New York Jets. They're a bad team, period. So I think the Chiefs can – they literally should be able to throw their helmets out there and get a win. If they come flat, fine, they don't cover the 20. But they should win this game no matter what. I know they're going to say all the right things. Oh, this is a good team, well coached, blah, blah, blah. We're going to hear Andy Reid. So let's see if he touches his face or gives any tells to the I'm lying side of things when he tells us they're a good team and well coached. But you know it's coming tomorrow, right?
Yeah, the New York Jets are a challenge, and we're looking forward to the challenge of playing the New York Jets.
Yeah, they're a good football team.
I was thinking earlier today, like, what is it to get excited about this game? I mean, if you're just an NFL fan, you don't have any investment in the Jets or the Chiefs. Like, what are the storylines that get you really excited about watching this football game? I can think of maybe one: Le'Veon Bell playing against the Jets.
Okay, yeah, there's one.
Other than that, if I'm an NFL fan, like, why am I going to watch the Chiefs play the Jets on Sunday?
The other storyline that I think could come out of this is the fact that if you had Dick Vermeil as the head coach, or Jimmy Johnson or Lane Kiffin, you could be like, you know what, he might try to score 70. Right, they might go for it. Like, Dick Vermeil loved his records, so I think Dick might have poured it on at least for three quarters and seen what number he could get to. Jimmy Johnson never seemed to worry about his opponent, so I could see him hanging a big number. Lane Kiffin, you know, those kind of mindsets. But, you know, Andy Reid's going to, like, you know, if they get out to 28-0, the faster they get to 28, the lower the final score is going to be.
I think you're right. I think we saw, you know, Andy Reid was asked about this in the post game after the Denver game and really shied away from it and said it wasn't really accurate. But I thought he wasn't real creative with his play calling, and for a reason, why give anything away? And that's something, you know, we've talked about before. But I think you're going to see that the entire second half. I mean, he's got so many plays that are one-off that seem like they're going to work once, and once they're out there, they're out there. Why would you use any of those in this game on Sunday? I mean, if they went all out, I mean, they're not. I don't think this is a team that could get to 60 or something like that against. But I don't see how the Jets score a touchdown against this or against the first team defense.
No, it should not happen. That's for sure. And to your point about Le'Veon Bell, maybe that is the storyline: is that Le'Veon Bell gets a bunch of carries. One, just kind of like, you know, he's going to want the carries against the Jets, but also just to let him run through a number of plays to actually have practice and played, you know, in the offense, the kind of plays that they want him to run. So I think we might see, you know, maybe, you know, you flip it up and he gets 12 or 15 carries and three or four catches, because they just want to get him into the mix of the offense.
I think you could see him maybe be on the field for 40% of the offensive snaps on Sunday. You know, what's interesting is as good as he looked on those couple of runs he had, the 16-yard carries, I think he'd tell you the play that they learned the most from was the one he made the mistake on, where he didn't get his head. You know, he's obviously the hot read on that swing pass and didn't get his head around quickly, so Mahomes fakes the pass and basically takes the sack. Those are plays that, heck, if you feel that the guy needs the timing and the chemistry with the offense, no better way than like I said, to flip him out there and see what happens. And this is an opportunity to do it. And you're going to get the absolute best of Le'Veon Bell on Sunday, whatever he has left in the tank, because that's been the question since you bring a guy like that over. You're going to get it on Sunday.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, you know, again, kind of on the trade front, like, are you surprised at how Andy Reid seems to want to get a second tight end out there, but they don't seem to want to go out and get a high-level second tight end?
Huh. I'd never really thought of it that way. Like, I've been trying to think of maybe some of the guys that might be available out there on you know, some struggling teams that might make sense in that role.
Well, we know anybody. We talked about it and said the Jets. I called the Jets an estate sale with a bunch of greedy relatives, right? Like, in other words, we're selling everything right now immediately because we want we need the will executed because I need my check, right? Like, that's the Jets. They will sell anybody. Like, they are absolutely tanking, in my opinion, and they will move you anyway. Chris Herndon has shown some signs in the past for the Jets. The Giants suck, too. They should be in a full tank mode. Evan Ingram used to look good the handful of games he'd play. This year he's playing all the games, but he doesn't look good. Those are a couple of guys that have a bit of a pedigree to them. But I'm just amazed. And that's another thing, like the Bears, watching Demetrius Harris out there. You know, I forgot to ask Mark Carmen about this when we popped him on the Need to Know. When, you know, he had a text like, things the Bears need to do. Or excuse me, a tweet. Things the Bears need to do. And it was this, and it was this, and it was stop throwing to Demetrius Harris and get the ball to Cole Kmet. Right? I'm like, it's the same thing that was going on here. Right? Like when Nick Kizer is the number one target, which I don't think he has been, but we know he dropped one when he got himself open when Mahomes, you know, bought more time 2 weeks ago. And then last week he catches it and then he fumbles it. Now, I think the game's just a little too fast. And if you like what you see in Nick Kizer after carrying him on the practice squad, it might be that it's just going to take a whole season or half a season for the game to slow down. And then we're going to find out that, you know what, this kid's pretty good. I am open to that. And maybe that answer's there. I'm also open to the fact that this is just Demetrius Harris, too, who every dollar Demetrius Harris has earned in the NFL, he owes to Andy Reid and his ability to scheme people open. Because he doesn't even catch all the balls that are thrown his way when he's open. And yet he keeps getting millions of dollars to play this game. Like, he seems to want to run the two tight ends, so let's go get him a good second tight end.
The second tight end's role, though, is just – it's not that. I mean, the second tight end's role is to be a max protect guy or an extra run blocker position.
That's what Demetrius Harris was in your mind?
That's what the second role tight end is. When they play 12 personnel, that's the intention most often of the second tight end. If you watch how many times Nick Kizer stays in to block, especially when Anthony Sherman's been out, obviously it's been a little bit different. But also just how many times that they actually run the ball when he's on the field. There's not a lot of times. There's hardly any times when the number two tight end is the number one option on the play. And the only time I can remember the past two or three years that that's been the case is that play in Tennessee where they threw the screen pass to Blake Bell.
Oh, my Lord. There's more than that. It just hasn't been a play that cost him the game as to why we remember it, I'm sure. But I would say this. Is that what they run? He's in there because that's what they want to run? Or is it that's what they end up running because that's all that guy can do? That's my
probably
point. Like, if you can get to Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert together with the Eagles, all right? I mean, like, there are teams that have. The Packers have a couple of guys. Now, Jay Sternberg hasn't really done anything, but he's at least high pedigree. But Tanyan, you know, is emerging as a top-shelf guy. He was even released by another club. I think the Lions released him, and then the Packers picked him up. My point just is, like, I don't think it's that hard to find a serviceable second tight end that can block. Like, I don't think every guy out there that's a tight end is either, you know, a glorified tackle or a glorified wideout. I think there are guys that can do both, and if you had it, then I think Andy Reid's offense would be that much harder to defend.
If I'm Andy Reid, I'm not looking for a reason to put a slower tight end out there in favor of a fast-footed wide receiver when my offense is built on timing and speed.
So, okay. I mean, are you getting production out of all your wideouts?
Well, first of all, I think it's really hard to judge the offense based on only getting, what was it, 40? The starters got about 40, 45 snaps on Sunday. Mecole Hardman, I thought, probably had his best game, and that's not saying a ton because he hasn't produced this season. Sammy Watkins has played well this year when he's been healthy. Of course, we always have to have that phrase when we're talking about Sammy Watkins. I do think he's going to be back sooner rather than later. I'm not seeing let's go get another weapon as a reason to spend on the trade deadline.
Okay, I'm looking here. Receiving yards by receivers. Travis Kelce, 501. Tyreek Hill, 439. In seven games, Mecole Hardman has 251. Sammy Watkins in five games has 222. Next up, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. DeMarcus Robinson, 123. Like, he's got to be out on the field?
Well, I think you're going to see less and less of DeMarcus Robinson, and you saw a little bit less of him on Sunday as far as percentage of snaps, but Byron Pringle ate into his workload a little bit. And based on what we see offensively, I don't understand why that hasn't happened sooner, and I think it needs to happen more often because Pringle is
a guy that's taken advantage of his opportunities, and he's also a good blocker. And that's the reason that you say you put DeMarcus Robinson out on the field, is the guy is your best blocking wide receiver. That's not a weakness for Byron Pringle.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I get it. I'm president of the Byron Pringle fan club. But you know, to me, I'm more intrigued by what the wide receivers are going to be over the horizon. I know you say you don't need another weapon. You don't need another weapon this year, right? But, like, two of their wideouts, Sammy Watkins and DeMarcus Robinson, figure to be gone next year. So if you did find a wide receiver that's going to be on your roster beyond this year, it does fill a hole for next year as well. I'm not saying run right out and get a wideout. I'm just saying who you're going to go get is dependent upon who's available, right? So if what you want is a guard, but there isn't one guard on the market, you're not going to go just make a deal to make a deal, right? But if there is a good wideout that you think fits what you do, I don't think you ever miss an opportunity to go get a guy. And plus, we're talking about guys that are going to be costing, you know, what was it, a sixth that conditionalizes up to a fifth on Everson Griffen? Like, if you were desperate for a DN, which the Chiefs are a little bit thin at DN, let's be real, with Charlton down and Okafor out for, what, he's going to be back week 11 or something they're talking about with him. And frankly, he hasn't been real dependable here health-wise. You know, that's a guy that, like, those kind of guys that you can go get are probably not going to be real expensive. We're not talking about giving first-round picks away for some star somewhere.
No, I mean, I remember at the Combine in February, and, of course, you're trying to gauge who the Chiefs are talking to, what positions the Chiefs might be interested in, and there's so many guys available simultaneously that you have to make decisions about which podiums you're going to go to when you're at the Combine. And I hit all the top wide receivers because I thought this team needs a wide receiver, and it turns out DeMarcus Robinson comes back on a one-year deal. Sammy Watkins accepts a restructuring on a one-year deal. This combine, of course, we'll see if we're in person. Let's hypothetically say we are. Again, going to be attacking all the wide receiver podiums, the top wide receivers, because I think that's the position they're going to have to target in the offseason. And it's probably not quite as likely that you're able to get both of those guys back the way that you were this season. But, hey, I said that last year. I didn't see him getting both of those guys back. And I don't see them going out and targeting that position right now before they know for sure that they can't get both of those guys back.
Well, I'm going to tell you, you can stand down the travel department there at the Star. You're not going to be at the Combine. Sam McDowell is with us from the Kansas City Star. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. All right, we got to go quick, Sam. Ready? MU wins this year. How many total football?
I'm going to say four.
No, you're wrong. You're going to win more than that. What is your favorite Halloween candy?
You know, the most underrated candy is Mambas. And second is Cherry Mash.
Oh, my Lord. You are a freak.
This is a long conversation in a group text I have with friends, and I get railed on for these opinions on that one. So it's interesting you asked me that question.
It explains why you weigh 8 pounds, Sam.
You are ripped, rightfully so. Have you voted yet, yes or no?
No, I'll be voting on Election Day.
On Election Day? All right. Will you be carded?
Get carded. You got to show your ID, right?
No, you just got to be old enough. It's just like the bar. If you're old enough, you can vote. That's how it works. Since this is clearly your first election, I just will let you in on that little secret. Best Halloween costume you ever had was what?
Ah, interesting. Individual one, I would say. One year I actually went as Sam-I-Am, and I went all out on that one.
Wow, I can only imagine what that was. Sam, I am.
A group costume we had a Rugrats costume that was pretty great. I've got a twin brother, and so we dressed as Phil and Will, and we had the whole group in that one.
You have a twin brother? Identical?
Identical, yes. Yes, sir.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I got to see this sometime. Sam, you're the man, buddy. Always love the conversation. Stay healthy, stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, sir. I appreciate it.
You bet. Sam McDowell does a great job covering the Chiefs for the Kansas City Star. We'll take a break, come back, give you the kicker.
The Program with Soren Petro.
All right, man, you're the best. Thank you.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On The Program.
But first,
all right. Oh, my bad. Go ahead.
But first, a good sense into the hour answer. What pitcher has started the most World Series, potential World Series clinchers? It would be Andy Pettitte, 4.
Wow, that's it, just 4? I thought you were going to say like 11 or something. All the, World Series.
Yeah, World Series clinchers.
Yeah, not postseason. That makes sense. You can get your Good Sense right now. Go to GoodSenseSubs.com. You can order online. Make sure you're part of that loyalty club as well. 10% back every time. I mentioned it the other day. I got dinner for my mom and I at $17 on the loyalty club. It was great. It was a perfect deal. Founded right here in Kansas City, right here in Lenexa. Good Sense, locally owned and operated, and the app, super easy. Put your favorites in there. It's a couple of clicks, and your Good Sense order is waiting for you whatever time you want to pick it up. For the kicker, let's talk about Trevor Lawrence. I love headlines that say, Trevor Lawrence to stay at Clemson? And then you read the story. It's called clickbait. I know. I'm a sucker. I went for it. My mindset has been that I'm going to move on, Lawrence said Tuesday. But who knows? There's a lot of things that could happen. No. He goes on to say, for me, it's out of my control whether or not he ends up going to a team like the Jets. I'm here to do my best and help this team win games. No matter where I go, whether it's across the country or whether it's close to home, whether I stay another year, we'll work it out. Let me tell you what's not going to happen. He's not going to be at Clemson next year. There's a pandemic going on. Why would anybody come back to Clemson next year when the payday is sitting out there waiting? Now, is he going to go to the Jets? Is he going to pull a John Elway? Is he going to pull an Eli Manning and try to strong-arm his way away from the Jets? That I will listen to. That's a headline worth printing.